In season two of The Business of Nonprofits, we'll talk to organizations taking a head-on approach to big challenges and big risk in pursuit of big rewards for their constituents. We'll unpack their strategies and see how some nonprofits are making it happen and how you can too.
Hi everyone, you're listening to The Business of Nonprofits. We're talking to the B&O Railroad Museum today, an organization sharing and preserving the legacy and experiences of railroading in the United States. With me today is Executive Director Chris Holen. Chris is an amazing resource. She's got 25 years experience in both for-profit and nonprofit, and that is coming in handy, and she is using every bit of her skills this year. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Why don't you take a couple of minutes and explain a little bit about who the B&O Railroad Museum is and the unique time that you're in right now?
The B&O Railroad Museum is a nonprofit. We are the birthplace of American railroading. We are where the very first stone was ever laid. We have the first mile of commercial track ever laid in the country on our property. We're a historic site. We have 8 historic buildings. We extend 40 acres into West Baltimore, and we're very excited. I always like to say to people that we are a historic site that became a museum, as opposed to a museum that holds historic things. They're both important, but it gives you an appreciation for the fact that we are a National Historic Landmark. We are a National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom site. We really are on hallowed grounds and need to preserve not just the collection, but the buildings for everybody and the respect for everybody that came through. But we are very excited because in 2027, the American Railroad, of which we're the birthplace, will turn 200 years old. It will celebrate its bicentennial. So that is our North Star. And that is gearing all of our activities, preparing for that celebration. And then also looking at changes that we're doing both locally and nationally to prepare for that.
We were just talking, it's like running 3 companies, right? You have your museum functions and you've got your nonprofit fundraising. So normal activities, but then you've got a huge capital campaign, you're kicking off this enormous celebration, and you're also doing some transformational, I'll call it like facilities and site planning.
We are. You are correct.
So like, walk us through, because it's so fascinating. How are you prioritizing that work?
As I said, 2027 is our North Star. Everything we do is geared towards positioning us better to celebrate 2027. So having that North Star helps us prioritize, but it is 3 elements. We do have a museum to run and support operationally. Like, we're coming up on Polar Express season. It starts in 2 weeks. That is a huge undertaking at this museum. It's actually a fifth of our operational revenue. So it is the day-to-day of a museum and taking care of it. But then we have the oldest continuously operating railroad repair facility in the United States, if not the world, on our property, 1869 to 1990. And we are going to restore that building in preparation for the 200th anniversary. And that is the $30 million campaign that you referenced. And as part of that, it will be restoring this amazing building, which deserves to be restored in its own right. But as part of that, we're going to reimagine our campus and actually change our entrance to face a challenged part of the community. I mean, most institutions, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit, you would tend to say, oh, don't look over there, nothing to see. We're going to face with the hope of sparking and the intent, and I'm sure it will, of community economic development by changing our entrance. So there's that focus, which is a pretty big focus for us. We've never done a capital campaign at this museum before. And then, yes, at the same time, we are seriously starting the planning for 2027, something that we hope will be a, because when we say the first railroad in the American railroad, we mean in Canada, in the United States, Central and South America. So it is worth celebrating when you think of everything that the railroad has brought to American life, culturally, socially, economically. So we are starting to work on how do we prepare for that, what is that anniversary going to entail? Who are going to be the partners? So they dovetailed well together the local campaign campus plan with the 200th, but then they also can be a little bit confusing to people as well. And so we are trying to look at it as in we're focused on the capital campaign currently and fundraising for that. We are not fundraising for the 200th anniversary yet, so that people aren't confused as to which one are you really talking about. We're talking about the capital one now, but we also want you to be coming excited and thinking of ideas and partnering with us for the 200th. And in an ideal world, we'll have the capital campaign done before we seriously start fundraising for the 200th anniversary celebration.
Yeah. It almost seems a little backwards, right? One is definitely more imminent, right? You have the construction need and the refacing and changing the entrance need. And that makes sense. But you're really talking about like the birthplace of America in so many ways, right? The American frontier. And when you think of railroading, and there's so many things that come to mind, that almost seems to overshadow everything. And then you've got your day-to-day. For those of you who are listening, absolutely, please check out the B&O Railroad Museum website. I was so heartened when I hopped on and I saw the Polar Express stuff for the Christmas season. So you have stuff that happens that's seasonal, and it just looks like an amazing site. The pictures are gorgeous. So please do check that out. Talk a little bit more about, like, do you have staff dedicated to each of these endeavors, or do you split it up by day? How are you juggling all of this?
We have a small and mighty staff. We do have hired some consultants to work with us as well. We had to raise money to hire those consultants, obviously. Might have said to you before, we hire builders. We hire people who are excited by change, excited to make improvements. We don't tend to hire people that, you know, if you're somebody who likes to maintain the status quo and do a good job, but maintain, we wouldn't be the right place for you because we're not at that stage of our development as an institution. And even though we've been here for a long time, we know where we want to go. We have a North Star, and that's going to take a lot of work to get there. So we try to really look at culture of the employees that we're hiring so that we hire people who find this exciting to have multiple priorities. But we also try to look upon everything, again, as the North Star. Like, if we do an activity now that helps the museum operationally, is it something that then might attract a donor who might be interested in the capital campaign? Is it something that we can use for the 200th anniversary celebration? So we try to make sure that everything we do has a connection to at least one element, either the capital campaign or the 200th, with what we do operationally. So that's the strategy that we're always looking at, is how does one connect to the other so that we're making investments and positioning ourselves well.
Yeah, that almost seems like sell-through, right? You're deepening your relationship by selling additional products, right? If you look at the for-profit world, you would almost look at that as a cross-sell and a deeper strategic alliance, which I think is super smart. You almost have to do that.
Well, and I really appreciate that. That's exactly, I mean, it's the stewardship, but you have to look at yourself as, what's all your stakeholder relationships? How do you raise your visibility? How do you attract the type of constituencies and expand your constituencies that will be interested? So, you know, for example, African-American journey from slavery to civil rights is deeply entwined to the railroad. And a lot of people don't know that. Well, that's a huge American story. So telling that story also positions to attract a wider and more diverse and inclusive audience. You know, what you choose to talk about at a museum, what stories you choose to share is important. And that's how we look at diversity, equity, and inclusion. But also, we became a National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom site. And now we have increased visibility in new audiences that will then help position us for the 200th. That's one example. But there are many examples of projects we choose to take on. We, the American Freedom Train, went around the country. We have the locomotive for that. It went around the country in 1976. 250th anniversary of the United States is in 2026. So the railroad came just 50 years after the United States was formed. And we decided we just moved that locomotive from our front parking lot to our restoration facility because we're going to restore it in time for 2026. We live streamed it, just pulling it from one part of our property to the other. We had over 21,000 views of people watching that. Well, that is a fan base that then transitions to the 200. So everything we're doing, we're trying to look at who does that attract? Who does that interest? Because the railroad affects everybody. And we want to make sure that everybody realizes the impact of the railroad. So that's part of how we're doing it. I mean, it may seem too broad, but it's more, does one connect? Again, when we look at any activity we're going to do, which is always an opportunity cost, does it connect or who will it connect to position the railroad, you know, the museum to either attract the right partners or the right donors for these events to be successful?
Absolutely. Talk to me a little bit about marketing. So you are an extremely transparent organization, not just because you're a nonprofit and you have to be, but your pictures and your video history really is just photographic and evocative. It's so visceral. When you're looking at your site, there's just these beautiful old buildings and these locomotives and railroad ties that have been there for 200 years. Do you have one marketing person or is this like a fleet and they each focus on different things that are complementary? How did you come up with all of that?
Well, it's really funny that you say that because, and thank you for saying that. We have three people that work on marketing for us. We have a chief marketing officer, then a creative director, who's just amazing. And we have a social media content creator. Because if you're not online, then you just don't exist. And I actually created that position when I first started 5 years ago, because we had social media sites, but we didn't have somebody dedicated strictly to that. So felt that that was very important to have that. And our old site, we had had forever, and it did not reflect who we were or who we wanted to be. And it also wasn't functional. So we underwent a fairly in-depth process about 3-4 years ago to completely overhaul our site to reflect who we feel we are. So that's the site you see today. So it's very visual. It shows you the pictures on the ground now, but it shows you from the past. It's a very vibrant, energetic site, which is what we're trying to convey, is that we have energy here.
Yeah, you feel that in the website. You feel that clearly when you're speaking. There's something about community, which seems to be a big theme with a lot of the nonprofits we're talking to this year. I love the restructure of your entrance to embrace community. I think a lot of people assume that a museum is a static piece of history. And more than anything, your site and your approach is about a journey and moving into the future and taking the community with you. So talk about that. Did you come in with that idea?
A couple of things. One, so I was hired 5 years ago. I'm on my 5-year anniversary, and my board hired me to be a change maker. And I have a background in community economic development. So it was really a very good fit. And I've really enjoyed it and nonprofit management, really. But the key is for us, we adopted during the pandemic, we adopted the phrase, wow, and it was a Smithsonian phrase. I will credit it. It was to Secretary Bunch. He said it, and we took it to heart and made it our mantra. While not a community center, we are striving to be the center of our community. And as a result, and I think for a small museum, we have done really cutting edge because it guides everything we do. The 200th anniversary and how can we create more community impact? Those are our two main goals. And we created a workforce development program because we extend 40 acres into West Baltimore and it does get a little more challenged. And so we created a workforce development program using our campus as a school. In the areas of construction, facilities maintenance, we have 8 buildings, many of which are historic, and then railroad operations, track operations. We have a regulated track, and we have had people graduate now. We've been doing, the program was launched officially almost 2 years ago, and we have had people graduate and go work for Class 1 railroads, for short line railroads. I mean, people going into very good family wage living jobs. And that was the point. We also have created everything we do. We look at, and even with the workforce development program, that of course then positions you differently and it creates an impact in the community and it opens you up to different funders. So we have looked upon that. What can we do to provide community service? We offer sensory programs because sensory children on the spectrum, trains are frequently a passion because they're predictable and structured. We started a sensory camp and a sensory program in 2019. This last year, we offered 4 weeks of camp that were each week had a waiting list because camps, they don't exist. Those kids mostly have never been to camp because they either aren't camps or they're cost prohibitive. It's a community service that we're providing. And so everything we do, so we just recently won the Greater Baltimore Committee. It's the business committee in Baltimore, the Mayor's Community Impact Award. And we have won it in 2019, 2021, and now 2023. So we're very pleased because we do not think there's any other institution, either for-profit or nonprofit, that has won it 3 times. So we very much look at, can we provide farmers markets, you know, if they're during the pandemic? Can we let our space be used to other nonprofits? We have had culinary schools for the homeless take over our cafe. So that's always part of the thinking as well. And how can we be a service provider as well as a museum?
That's tremendous. And I think there's something there about looking at the programs that you offer and how you can expand that footprint, maybe not scale, maybe scope, right? Who else can I serve or what complementary services are there? I love the idea of branching into, is there a DEI play, right? Could I help someone, families that are on the spectrum, or could we reach out to underprivileged people? Could we have a homeless kitchen that comes in and shares the facility, you know, once a week, just to draw that different input and really make the site something more, right? Something that thrives in the community.
100%. And I will tell you that since we really changed our focus to be outward facing, you know, we are a site that is for the community. We are in the community. We are part of the community. Our attendance has diversified tremendously. And, you know, for our business, that's not always true. That to us is one of the greatest compliments is when I look and see all demographics in our museum. And everybody enjoying themselves. And it's intentional. It takes work, but people feel comfortable. And that's the goal.
And I think you echoed that in your diversity of volunteer populations, right? You talked about how you have, I want to say, what, 6 generations?
We do. We have people from their teens all the way up to their 90s. So when you talk about volunteers, we have volunteers in every decade. And I find it always very interesting. I think we'd be a great place for a generational study, actually. But it's interesting to see a 15-year-old alongside a 90-year-old, you know, with maybe a 60-year-old supervising, right? Yeah,
right.
But everybody working on a project together.
Yeah. And I think that also is a testament to the vibrancy of the story, right? The story doesn't end. It's not just historical. It's truly something that is living and carrying forward. And I think there's a metaphor there, right? The American West was settled by railroad, and you really are seeing this as like a spoke approach to taking your message and carrying it out. I think that's amazing.
I was just going to say, when you look at the railroad and every aspect of life, I mean, we got our time zones from the railroads. As I said, there's a whole journey between slavery and civil rights with the railroads. Most of our labor policies came from the railroads. Almost, I say to people today, they say, oh, I don't take the train. And I say, well, you know what? Everything you own does. It's a $2 billion a day. If they had shut down, that's what the hit would have been to the economy on a per day basis. And it's our job, we feel, to make people understand the past impact and the stories behind the trains, as well as what is the present and future of the railroad. So the relevancy going forward. So it is all encompassing to American life. We say we tell the story of America through the lens of the railroad.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. I mean, clearly you're a busy woman and I can't say enough thank you for being on this podcast because your days have to be full.
So talk a little bit about what's a nugget of wisdom. If you had to share with someone something that you've taken away from this sort of 5-year journey in the next 2 years, what would it be? Is there a method to the madness? Something that you would say, the linchpin for me is this one thing. What would you give them as a piece of advice?
I think I would have many things to say. A couple of things. One, I would say this to people all the time, is one of the benefits of getting older or more experienced in our working years is you learn, always keep your communities. You know, you're going to have many communities over the years, and keep them no matter what jobs you change. Because I've had many different careers in my life. They all connect. And I've worked in the transportation field probably 20 years ago. Well, I'm in the transportation field. So now I'm calling up a lot of those former contacts. So always keep your contacts because you don't know. And two, I would say, be positive. People are inspired by a vision and positivity. Even when you don't feel positive, be passionate, be positive, because it comes through. And that's what attracts high energy. It attracts high energy employees. It attracts partners. If you are positive and passionate as well. And also, at the end of the day, nonprofits are businesses. People sometimes forget that. You always have to look at what's the mission case, what's the business case. And in an ideal world, the mission and the business case align perfectly. Sometimes you're going to make decisions based only on mission. You know, there's not going to be a business case with it. But obviously, if you only focused on mission, you wouldn't have your nonprofit because you'd go out of business. On the flip side, sometimes you do make decisions based on a business perspective. But just know it when you're doing it. And if you don't stay true to your mission, then that's also going to. So it's just a matter. I frequently tell staff, think about the mission case and the business case, and make then your case for whatever activity or initiative we're going to do, because then when we know we're hitting the mark. And so it comes back to full circle. The North Star is the bicentennial of the American Railroad. So every activity we do, how does it connect back to that, both business-wise and mission case?
I do love that. And I want to be respectful of your time, because I feel like I could talk about that for about an hour and a half. I want to talk just a little bit about, you have a North Star, but you also have an arrow. When you talk about be a builder, that culture or that core competency, core value, whatever you want to call that, that is also pervasive for you. Be a builder. And I feel like that helps you align all these objectives, right? Because you could lay it all out, a mission case, a business case, and you could do it data-driven, all of that. But I feel like because you bring in people who are builders, they're naturally wired that way. So has that always been the way you worked, or is that new for you at the B&O Railroad Museum? Or,
you know, I'm a fairly entrepreneurial person. I am also a risk taker. I one time had a CEO tell me, you're fearless. But the goal is, you know, I like to punch above our weight. So wherever we are, whether we're at a really well-established organization, then how do we take it further? If you're at an organization where you have a big goal, how do you meet it? You know, so I am not someone to hire to run a status quo, because I wouldn't be happy and they probably wouldn't be happy with me. So therefore, it's how do we expand this partnership? How do we raise our visibility? How do we achieve that goal? How do we have? So I do tend to hire people along those lines. In this particular case, because it's a small business, but reaching a big goal, you have to have builders.
Yeah, absolutely. At least some. I mean, even if you're going to have a mix, you have to have some. You just have to.
100%.
So after the bicentennial, then what? Am I allowed to ask that?
We are focused on 2027. We have a major campaign to finish and to build that building. We are hoping that the restoration of that building will commence next year and go through 2 years. And so we're focused on that and then the celebration. So I will tell you what's next in 2027.
Awesome. I love it. We'll have to do a teaser trailer for that. If you had to put one ask out there, if you want to put something out into the world for our listeners, one wish, what would you ask for? Is it money? Is it volunteers? Is it?
I mean, I would ask for people that think that they would like to learn more to contact us. If you think that you historic preservation person and would love to see this building, we'd be happy to share it with you. If you're someone who is really into community impact and have ideas for us or would like to share it. I mean, obviously any nonprofit's going to save money, but it's also partnerships, connections, it's volunteer time. It's all of it because we scale based upon our connections to others.
Love it. I do love that. Connection is so important. So why don't you tell the listeners how to get a hold of you? I know that there's a contact us on the website, but if they want to donate.
Sure. There is a contact us on our website. And we also have a big donate button. So it's borail.org. So please reach out to us. I see those emails that come through too. So if you would like to send me an email or have ideas for us or feedback for us, connections, we would love to have them. They're all welcome.
Awesome.
And come visit us. We would love to see you. We have visitors from all 50 states and 40 countries typically on an annual basis.
You are located in Virginia, I want to say.
We are in Baltimore, Maryland, the birthplace of railroading. We are only about 40 minutes from Washington, D.C. You can take the train. The Amtrak train comes right here. So it's very easy to do. So we hope that when you're somewhere in the United States, that you come see us. Make the pilgrimage here.
Awesome. It's a beautiful sight. I can't stress that enough, how impressed I was with how gorgeous it is. And if you're planning a special event, I'm imagining you could also, there is an opportunity to have it on site. So check that out if you're having a wedding or a gala or a...
All of it. No, we really appreciate that, Stacey, because we actually are listed like number 6 or 7 in terms of largest venues in Baltimore. And that's after the convention centers and hotels. You know, all very nice, but if you want something unique and we can scale the size, we have a beautiful 1884 roundhouse that looks like a cathedral. It is absolutely magnificent. It contains the first 100 years of railroading, dinners, parties, receptions, proms. I held my mother's 90th birthday party there, but we can scale anywhere from making something for like 30 people up to 5,000 people. And we have a huge backyard. We do company picnics, reunions, weddings. We're very flexible and you can add a train ride into it. There's all kinds of things you can do and it's fun. We're very flexible that way. And we have free on-site parking, which is always helpful when you're talking about an event or a visit.
Yeah, that's huge, especially for that.
It is huge in an urban area, very much so.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it's beautiful. So Chris, thanks so much for joining us. I can't thank you enough. It is such a pleasure. And when you grow up around museums, you know, I grew up on the East Coast, there's this feeling of history and it's propelling you forward. But I don't think I've ever seen something quite as unique, maybe the Smithsonian, if I'm, you know, being honest, but I've never felt something like it's not just about the past, it's truly propelling me forward as just what I've seen from your site. It's so beautiful. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for saying that. And that is exactly what we're trying to achieve. I mean, we are a living site. We are a historic site, but we're a living site. And it's a site for everyone. And it's the past, the present, the future.
Awesome. So please, everyone, we're going to hold Chris to it. 2027, we're going to find out what she's doing next. But before then, we're going to have one heck of a party for the bicentennial. Absolutely. So thank you so much. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. I know Chris would love to hear from you, and so would we. We are a podcast at tgrmanagementconsulting.com. So thanks so much for listening. And on behalf of producer Sam, myself, and the entire TGR family, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, my name is Tiffany Rosick, CEO of TGR Management Consulting. Volunteerism is a core value of ours at TGR. In fact, it's something each and every one of our team members have demonstrated prior to being hired. Because we all believe all humans want to be part of something bigger than themselves, and together we are better.